Yo, what is going on, my fellow wrestling fans? Welcome to a brand new week, and welcome to a brand new edition of what we like to call the Clash of the Champions, where we talk about the different personalities, controversy, storylines, and all that shit in between that center around this world we know and love as professional wrestling. I am your host, the vegan you believe in, Conscious Kurt, aka the professor in the flesh as always, and my co-host needs no introduction, but the hell with it. He's about to give y'all one anyway.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. This is tag team partner Jonathan Randall at your guys' service, your venture himself. And this is not just a special edition because I've been waiting to do this for a while now, but this is our special edition of the Clash of Champions episode because we're going back in time, ladies and gentlemen, to review events that happened in the past. And for this episode, we're going back to November of 1996, covering the 1996 Survivor Series.
Yes, we will do that in just a few minutes. And yes, I remember that time frame very well as I was 10 years old at the time. And yes, that fall of 1996 period was a magical time. And I'm looking forward to diving into that a little bit later. But first, let's get into the build-up for this year's Survivor Series, which will be taking place next Saturday night, November 30th, from Vancouver, British Columbia. And the main event is shaping up very nicely as now we know the fifth member for Solo Sikoa's Dollar Tree Bloodline team going in to the War Games match. And to no surprise, as I predicted last week, that fifth member of that team is going to be Big Bronson Reed.
I don't know. I don't like the idea of that. Like I said on last week's episode, it's such a weird thing to do, honestly.
What, having a fifth member on each team?
Yeah, not necessarily having a fifth member, but having him is just, you just randomly just throw somebody who's feuding with somebody else.
Well, with the whole Seth Rollins aspect of it, I kind of saw it coming. So it wasn't a surprise to me that Bronson Reed was added to the team. But funny enough, after Bronson Reed and the rest of Solo's Bloodline beat down Roman, Sammy, Jimmy, and Jey Uso, Jey Uso specifically told Roman, like, yo, you got to make that call. You got to make that call. And then at the end of SmackDown, Roman was seen making a phone call to the wise man himself, Paul Heyman. But when he made that phone call, the number was disconnected. Yes, we haven't seen Paul Heyman since Solo and the rest of the crew beat his ass down at Madison Square Garden back in June. And now with War Games and with both bloodlines battling each other, it's now the right time for him to return. So I kind of saw this coming. And from how it's looking now, we may not see Heyman until possibly Survivor Series night.
I don't know. Anything could happen. Like I said, it was a big mystery who he called. Big mystery. Eventually we're going to find out, you know what I mean? But anything could happen at this point. I already know there's going to be a surprise appearance that night, so.
Oh, yeah, so we'll get into who that might be, who makes that appearance in a few minutes. But on Raw Monday, Sammy, Jimmy, and Jey once again tried to plead with Seth Rollins to join their team for War Games, but Rollins was not having it. He said there is no way under any circumstances he will ever team with Roman Reigns ever again. And this would play into the main event that night as Seth Rollins would go one-on-one with Bronson Reed in the rematch from Crown Jewel. Before the match started, Tama Tonga, Jacob Fatu, and Tonga Loa were outside the ring backing up Bronson, but then Sammy, Jimmy, and Jey came to fight them off. So Seth and Bronson Reed, they have their match. The match is good. And as Seth Rollins is about to finish off Bronson Reed, Solo Sikoa could be seen standing on top of the announce table, distracting him. And that would allow Bronson Reed to take advantage, hit Rollins with Death Valley Driver, and then the tsunami from the top rope to finish off Rollins and tie their series at one apiece.
Wow.
And considering how this all ended, you kind of thought that the Solo version of the Bloodline were going to cost Rollins the match. In a way, they did. But the thing is, they didn't really touch him. Like, Solo didn't, like, hit Rollins with the spike or anything. Like, none of that went down. So considering that it went down this way where they cost him the match, and also considering that Roman called Paul Heyman on Friday, I'm starting to think that maybe Seth Rollins won't be the fifth member of that team anymore. And that fifth member might be somebody else.
I don't know who. Who do you have in mind?
I'll give you a hint. You're wearing his hoodie right now.
Really? No, that's weird. Again, just a random person to throw in CM Punk?
Well, there's two reasons why I think this might happen. One, because of Punk's association with Heyman. And two, considering that Rollins doesn't like Punk, Punk joining Roman's team and backing them up at Survivor Series after Rollins refused might like push him over the edge and piss him off to the point where eventually, I've like predicted this happening for months, that would lead to him turning heel going into the feud with Punk for WrestleMania next year.
Okay. It seems to add up. Seems okay. I could see that. It's just like, well, I never like thought about that, you know what I mean? Or thought about CM Punk as being the fifth member to begin with. I mean, a couple weeks ago, I mean, I he was like the last person I would have thought of.
Yeah, a month ago I thought this was just going to be 4-on-4, but then they said there was going to be a fifth member for each team. And then last week I was thinking it's going to be Rollins, or Rollins is eventually going to agree to join the team. And he might still do that. That might still happen. But from how Rom ended on Monday, and considering that Paul Heyman's like now being implemented back into this, Punk could be that fifth guy. And also, we haven't seen Punk since Hell in a Cell, which is almost 2 months ago now. So this might be the way for him to come back. And one more thing, it'll be the 1 year anniversary of when he returned at last year's Survivor Series.
Right, which was in Chicago.
So this part of the storyline is interesting, like to kind of guess and wonder who that fifth member of the team is going to be. But with 1 week left until Survivor Series, it's going to definitely make this a lot juicier than it was before. I mean, overall, this whole thing has been rushed with, you know, Jimmy, Jay, and Sammy all agreeing to join Roman again. All that shit's been rushed. It probably should have started a little sooner. But now with this whole fifth member aspect and Paul Heyman coming back too, now it's starting to feel a little juicier. And in many ways, it's making Survivor Series feel like a bigger deal than it has been felt over the last few years.
In a long time. Yeah, in a long time, which is a good thing because, you know, for years, Survivor Series was like, it is always was part of the Big Four or Big Five, but it just seemed like it wasn't like on the tier level of Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, or SummerSlam because of the matches and the buildups that they had.
Yeah, but with War Games next weekend, with this story going as long as it has, this is going to be big, man. This is going to be big. Regardless of our complaints, of our criticisms, by the time we get to Survivor Series next Saturday, it is going to be worth it.
Oh, we're not going to be complaining no more. Yeah, we're not going to be complaining anymore. I know that for a fact. And, you know, it has been getting juicier, not just, you know, for the men's War Games match, but also for the women's War Games match as well.
Yeah, we talked about last week on Raw how it all ended with a brawl between Nia Jax, Tiffany Stratton, also Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez, and also on the opposite side, Bianca Belair, Jade Cargill, Io Sky, and Naomi. And then Friday on SmackDown, Candice LeRae was added into the mix as her and Tiffany Stratton helped Nia Jax defeat Naomi in their women's title match, which is actually a great match, by the way. That was a very good match between Naomi and Nia. And even before that, Liv and Raquel attacked Bianca and Jade backstage, keeping them from helping Naomi out. And then Monday on Raw, Nia, Liv, Raquel, Candice, and Tiffany Stratton were all in the ring. And then the team of Bianca, Jade, Io, and Naomi came out to confront them. And Liv kept pointing out the fact that, oh, there's only five of us and four of you. So who's going to throw the first punch? And right when she says that, Rhea Bloody Ripley's music hit.
Wearing a clear protective mask over her
face.
Over her orbital bone. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, over her face, protecting her broken orbital, right? Just comes out there and starts just attacking everybody. Well, mainly going after Liv Morgan, for one. But, man, like, seeing Rhea Ripley in the mask and, it, you know, seeing her being part, you know, because she's now been added in as the fifth member of the team in the women's War Games match. This is giving me like Survivor Series 1995 vibes when the Undertaker came back and wearing the mask and you know, he's part of the team in Survivor Series.
Oh, definitely. That's what I said also in my review I'm writing for PW Torch for Raw. And yeah, Rhea basically just came in the ring and just shouted out the words War Games right before she headbutted Liv, and a whole brawl broke out between all 10 women. And Io Sky laid out four of them with the moonsault, which is dope. So now it's official. We have the women's War Games match. We have Team Rhea against Team Liv. And now with Rhea back, this whole idea makes more sense. Because last week I was saying that this whole thing with the women's War Games like felt forced and felt unnecessary. But with Rhea back and considering the feud Rhea and Liv have had this whole year, it makes more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I do.
Yeah, but it was kind of weird, though, considering that she injured herself initially with a headbutt. That was the first thing she did when she came back.
Yeah, and then the thing is, my question is, if this would have never happened, let's just say she never hurt herself, I'm wondering what were going to be the plans to begin with.
Yeah, that's a good question. I was thinking maybe Bayley would have been on the team instead, and Bayley could still end up being a part of the team as a last-minute replacement. That could possibly still happen in the next week.
True. And she's, you know, busy on her end handling, you know, because this past Friday there was a tournament for the women's U.S. title.
First round matchup. Yes, there was.
Yeah, and she was included in it. I knew she was going to be included in it. I mean, look, I don't think she needs to win it. We all agree. We both agree last week that, what's her name needs to win it?
Chelsea Green?
Yes.
She could win it.
More deserved.
I could see her winning it. And from the babyface side of the women, I could see maybe Naomi winning it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but we have those matches going on over the next few weeks. We have a couple triple threats coming up. And the finals will be decided at Saturday night's main event.
Ah, okay. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, but this women's War Games match, I will say, the team of Rhea, Jade, Bianca, Io Sky and Naomi has to be the most stacked women's team for a War Games match I've ever seen. Or just in general, most stacked women's team for any Survivor Series I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Shit, son. Talk about an all-star team.
I know.
Yeah, a lot of stories are going to play into that. Yeah, a lot of stories are going to play into that. A lot of potential feuds are going to spark up in that match. I could definitely see it now. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's looking a lot more interesting than it did a week ago.
Yeah, I agree. We were all having doubts for it. But now, after what happened last Monday, you know what? I like this. And I can't wait. Day after my birthday? Man, crazy.
It's going to be a fun weekend. Thanksgiving, your birthday, then Survivor Series, and then you have football on Sunday. Yeah, you're going to be living good that weekend.
Ooh. I'm getting distracted right now because I'm over here thinking about, man, I was like, does football come on Netflix? That's Christmas. But I was like, and I'm thinking about, oh my God, I hope it doesn't buffer. Just like the Tyson and Jake Paul fight this past Saturday. Oh,
I heard that whole thing was a shit show.
Waste of time. You know, people should be glad it was on Netflix if you had it. If that fight was on pay-per-view, that would have been such a waste.
Yeah, $50 for that bullshit.
Such a waste. And the fact that it was buffering a lot, man. I had Netflix for years. I've never. Even during the Tom Brady roast, it didn't buffer like that.
Hopefully, Raw doesn't have those problems when it moves to Netflix in January.
Yes.
And also, from what it's coming out to be, Travis Scott is going to do the theme song for Raw when it moves to Netflix. Triple H was at his concert recently and presented him with like a updated version of the hardcore title.
Yeah, I saw that.
Good shit.
Yep.
And also, apparently, Raw is going to be TV-14 when it moves to Netflix too.
Yes. Yeah. NXT will be TV-PG. I believe SmackDown will be. What was the rating for SmackDown again, moving forward?
Probably still TVPG, but if they end up having Megan Thee Stallion make a cameo on it, I think they're going to have to switch up the rating.
Oh, God.
That's another story for another time. But yes, another match I think we're probably going to get at Survivor Series, especially considering how this match ended on Raw Monday, is Bron Breakker, Sheamus, and Ludwig Kaiser in a three-way for the Intercontinental title.
Hmm.
I'm down for that, man. Yo, that match that Breaker and Sheamus had on Monday was great. I was a little bummed at the finish, but the finish made sense if you're going to add Kaiser into it. Because, yo, that match is a match to watch. I don't care what anyone says.
I don't know if it's going to happen, but if it does.
I think it will.
No. I'm not talking. I'm talking about another potential match, right? Because this past Friday on SmackDown, we saw the return of Shinsuke Nakamura, one of my favorites.
Oh, yes.
He just went at it with LA Knight, setting up a potential feud between them for the U.S. title, and I love it. This is good for the both of them. They need it. This really puts the U.S. title as a main attraction now, and I love it, man. This does good for Shinsuke and LA Knight. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen this upcoming Friday, though, but maybe, possibly, I'll love to see that match on the card. If it doesn't, maybe they'll probably do it for Saturday night's main event.
Yeah, so much for those rumors I was hearing about Shinsuke getting released, like when the next round of cuts came. But
nope.
I'm happy he's sticking nope. around. He's nope. sticking around. He has a new look.
Yes.
Yeah, so him and LA Knight in a feud, I fucks with it.
Hell yeah, I mess with it. I love it. This does good for the both of them. I love it. I love it, man.
You know who Nakamura kind of reminds me of now that I watched the new season last Friday? The chosen dude from Cobra Kai.
Did you finish it?
Yeah, of course I did.
Okay.
Did you not watch it yet?
I haven't even started it yet.
Oh, shit. Okay, I won't ruin it for you. It's very good, though. It's definitely a lot better than the first half of season 6 was.
I bet.
Also, look out for Britt Baker in a few episodes, too. She's in 2 of the episodes.
I heard about that. I saw that, how she has a little cameo appearance in that. But, yeah, I'm going to watch it. I'm still finishing up the Penguin series.
Oh, my best friend, I was staying at his house last night, and he actually finished it.
Oh, yeah?
I didn't watch it because I haven't gotten the chance to start it yet, but, yeah, he finished it.
I'm on the 7th episode. It's pretty good so far. I only got one more episode left. So, yeah, I wanted to finish that, and then I'll jump into Cobra Kai. But, yeah, is there anything else you want to get into before we jump into our wrestling, DeLorean?
No, I think it sums it up. We have Survivor Series next Saturday. We're going to see what other matches end up getting added. Because as of now, we only have 3 matches with the 2 War Games matches and also the Gunther and Damian match.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely. Yeah. And one more thing. This upcoming Friday on SmackDown, there will be a face-to-face between Kevin Owens and WWE champion Cody Rhodes. So we're going to see how that's going to play out on Friday. But we already know they're going to put that match on a card, as I predicted.
Actually, I think with the way it's looking now, they're probably going to hold off on it until Saturday night's main event. Because I feel like if it was going to be on Survivor Series, considering it's the championship match, they would have made it official by now.
Oh, no, they wouldn't. No, they're going to make it official on Friday. Watch. Something's going to happen. They're going to make it official. I don't think
so. They're going to probably hold off on it the way it's looking now.
No, you can't. You can't. No, that's Cody Rhodes. You can't leave him off the card like that. And there's only 3 matches on a card, you say?
Yeah, so I think they'll probably add the Intercontinental title match to the card and then possibly maybe the U.S. title match. But the way it's looking now, I don't think Cody and Kevin Owens happens at Survivor Series.
I bet they're going to.
Maybe they'll have a segment. Maybe at Survivor Series they'll have a segment or something, but I don't think it's going to be the match yet.
Oh. They already have their segment on Friday. That's their face-to-face.
Yeah, but maybe that'll lead to another segment.
You're going to have another one? I don't
see it happening at Survivor Series anymore because.
That's weird. You have 2 segments within a weekend?
Hey, look, I'm not the one who books it.
I predict they're going to book the match.
We'll see. We'll see. Only time will tell. But it would be weird if Cody's left off the show. But, I mean, these things have happened.
See?
Honestly, with the card being the way it is, we don't really need that match.
No, we do.
Because chances are the match is going to end in disqualification or like a fuck finish anyway. So, with that being considered, I don't mind if they hold off on it for a few more weeks.
No, I mean, regardless of the finish, he's like, that's your guy. You have to have him on a card. You know what I mean? So I predict we'll see what's going to happen on Friday, though. But I predict that they'll book the match on the card. So anyway, are you ready?
I am ready, my friend.
Do you see what hat I'm wearing? Notice anything?
It is the Chicago Bulls, the 1996 NBA champions, which is the year we're going to be talking about today. Because
November.
Yes, our main topic of the day is going to center around the 1996 WWE Survivor Series, which took place on November 17th of that year from Madison Square Garden, world's most famous arena. And that's this right, show right. really exemplified how the Garden setting really made the event feel like an even bigger deal.
Yep. But before we talk about Survivor Series 1996, there was stuff going on in the world of November of that year. So much going on. Before we get into that, I'm going to ask you, Kurt, of November of 1996, what were you doing? Where were you? And how old were you?
I was 10 years old. I was in the fourth grade. During that time frame, I was really anticipating this show specifically. But other things I was interested in during that time was actually the movie Space Jam that came out that weekend. I actually saw it the Saturday before the Survivor Series. And damn, I just remember having a really good time watching that movie in the theaters. Laughed my ass off. It was super entertaining. Great experience. And also, like, looking back at it now, one thing about that movie that really stands out, that's been a lost art in many ways, is the soundtrack.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Damn good soundtrack, man. What a time to be alive. Yeah. Well, where were you living at the time?
I was living at my grandma's house in South Florida. My grandmother, who just passed away recently over the summer, I was living at her house along with my brother and my mother. I lived there pretty much all of the 90s. And yes, that was the time frame I was living there for that Survivor Series. My mother was nice enough to let me stay up late to watch the entire show that night. So shout out to moms for that. Yeah, because this show was a big deal. And one specific thing I was looking forward to that night, other than the main event, was the return of my favorite wrestler of all time, the GOAT, Bret the Hitman Hart.
Yes, which we'll get into later. That's funny that you said that you live in Florida, because at that time, so for me, I was 4 years old at the time. I believe I was in preschool at the time, and I was living in Florida as well.
What part of Florida?
Yeah, are you familiar with Cocoa Beach, Florida? You ever heard of that place?
Of course I am. Of course I am. I've never been there, but I know it's like in kind of central Florida area. And obviously that's where the model Rick Martel is from.
Oh, man. Yes, that's right. Damn it. He needs to be in the Hall of Fame.
He does. He really does.
Oh, man. So it's a very underrated gimmick and also theme song. Oh, man. I love that guy. Oh, yeah. But yeah, man. So I was 4 years old at the time. I think that was the year I started to, you know, watch wrestling, here and there. But I was, you know, I was a kid at the time, very little, and watching other things, you know, cartoons and just, you know, just being a kid, pretty much. You know, 4 years old, just very young.
Much simpler time.
And yeah, times were completely different with these notes that I look back on, man. Like, so much happened in the month of you know, everything goes on, you know, all the time in our world, you know what I mean? But in this month in particular, November 1996, so November 5th, we had Bill Clinton was reelected for a second term, because they had their election that year.
Also that same day, Tupac's last real album came out, Machiavelli, 7-Day Theory.
I was going to get into that. That same day. Yeah, it's Kobe Bryant makes his NBA debut with the Lakers on in this month of November. Really young at the time. I believe he was only 19 years old at the time, I believe.
And also at the same time, Shaq made his debut with the Lakers too after leaving Orlando the year before.
Right. That month, November 9th, Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield finally had their fight that year, which
I remember that.
In a TKO. And it is funny how because, like, originally they were supposed to have their fight back in 1991, but that fight got postponed because, you know, Tyson got in trouble and he was sent into prison. So this was their pretty much like their makeup fight, pretty much.
Who would have thought that Tyson would have lost? That was a huge shock at the time.
At that, yeah, I mean, he already had lost before that. I mean, getting knocked out by Buster Douglas, but this one was different because Holyfield was one of the all-time greats, and it was a very huge thing. You know, this is the first time. This was before the ear bite incident, which happened a year later, though. But it was the very first fight between these two, and yeah, it was a very big deal.
Yeah, huge and, deal. Also, a classic movie that came out that week, one of my personal favorites from 1996, Set It Off.
Yeah, a lot of November is known for having, you know, good movies that come out. Like, you know, the best movies come out during the summer, though. But November, they know how to pull some good movies, either if it's like a action movie or comedy or even mainly like your holiday movies come out during that month. And so I did my research. Yeah, there was a lot of good movies that came out that month. So we talked about Space Jam earlier. Set It Off came out that month. 101 Dalmatians came out in November of 1996.
Oh, yeah, the live-action version. And, yes, it did.
Yeah. Do you like that one?
I never really watched it, honestly. For whatever reason, I never did.
What? You never watched 101 Dalmatians?
I watched the cartoon version, never watched the live-action version. I don't know why, but I never did.
Oh. It's good. It's good. I liked it.
I remember at the time they were using that Bow Wow Wow Yippee-Yo Yippee-Yay song to promote it.
Yeah. It's a good movie. I like it. I'm going to ask you this. What do you think? Okay. So I did some more research because I was, you know, but what do you think was the number one movie at that time, that month?
Well, actually, the weekend of that Survivor Series, it was actually Space Jam. But another popular movie that was out of the time that's very good, and I know this actor's name's been tainted over the years because of his, like, racially insensitive comments, but Mel Gibson's Ransom was actually a big movie at the time.
Yeah, that was the number one movie. Have you ever watched that movie? I've never...
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
What was it about?
Mel Gibson's son gets kidnapped. And, like, throughout the entire movie, he's, like, trying to find a way to get him back. It's not, like, your typical kidnapping movie. It has, like, a little bit more of a twist to it. But it's good. Gary Sinise from Forrest Gump, he's actually the villain.
Is this kind of like a 90s version of Taken a little bit, maybe?
I guess you could say that in a way. Yeah, Gary Sinise is the villain. Also, Renee Russo's in it. She plays Mel Gibson's wife. I guess they really liked working together in the Lethal Weapon movies. So they were a husband and wife in this, too.
Okay.
One trashy movie I saw that month, I wish I could get my money back for watching this movie. I can't believe I paid money to see it, was Hulk Hogan's Santa with Muscles.
Oh, really? Oh, God.
And this
is during the time Hogan is with the NWO at this time.
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember he was promoting that movie on Nitro like a few weeks before.
He was?
And then I ended up going to the movies. And then I went to the movies one afternoon just for the hell of it. And I saw it was playing. I'm like, you know what? Let me go see it. It's Hulk Hogan. And obviously I was 10 at the time. I didn't think much of it. But now that I look back at it now, I'm like, yo, could I have my $4 back, please?
Hey, I mean, $4 is nothing compared to how much we're paying now. You know what I mean?
I was 10 years old and it was a matinee. Of course, it was that cheap. And also, it was almost 30 years ago.
I know.
That's another story.
So, on the music side, I'm going to ask you a question. What do you think was the number one song at that time?
It's funny. I actually sang this song in karaoke a few weeks ago. The number one song actually during that time was No Diggity from Blackstreet and Dr. Dre.
Absolutely, yes, it was. It was the number one song.
That song was a jam, son.
In November.
That song was a jam. Honestly,
everywhere. Wow. Damn it, I want to go back now. Yeah, that was the number one song. And we just referenced earlier, yeah, Tupac's Don Calumiliati album came out that month. That's just crazy how, look, we remember that year because, you know, of course, his people will say his best album is All Eyes on Me, which came out, you know, earlier that year. And then, you know, he gets shot and he, you know, killed in September that year. Then about a couple months later, this album drops. Crazy.
Yeah, it was a wild year. Like, for as hot as Tupac was at that time, with All Eyes on Me and being a part of Death Row and the This Is the Bad Boy and all that, who would have thought, like, by the end of the year, by this point in the year at that, he would be dead?
I know.
Sad. That's shit, man.
Wow, man. Yeah, another another good album that came out that month. I didn't even know this. Little Kim's Hardcore.
Oh yes, her debut. Yeah, her debut album.
Yeah, my favorite song was "Crush on You."
Oh yeah, "Crush on You" is the jam, son.
I know. Yes, that's my favorite song from the album.
True, I know you seen
me
in the video. True, but still don't give me no
pretend. You remember the music video?
Of course, how could I forget? Aaliyah was in the music video.
Oh, And I don't know why I never listened to this one though, but I don't think it gets the recognition as his first album. But Snoop Dogg's The Dog Father came out that month as well.
Oh yeah, that's right, that did. Also, one of my favorite R&B groups during that period came out with their debut album that month, Drew Hill. They dropped their debut that month too.
Oh, which one was it?
It's the album with Tell Me, Sleeping in My Bed, Never Make a Promise, Five Steps. Yo, they had a lot of jams on that album, son.
Okay, wow.
Their second album, they were a bigger deal because they had that song from Rush Hour, that How Deep Is Your Love song and all that. But, yo, they were killing it with this album. Mm-hmm. This was the era of all the good-ass R&B groups, like Drew Hill, Boyz II Men, 112, Jodeci. They had all that shit during 96. Another thing I miss about that time period. And also one more thing, the number one show on television at the time during November of 96 was actually ER.
That came out that year?
No, it didn't come out that year. I think it had already been out for a few years, but it was like the number one show at the time.
But that was the number, I know my mom was all over that show. Wow. That's crazy. And you know what's even weird? Yeah, George Clooney was the main star on that show, or one of the main stars on that show.
I remember George Clooney back in the 80s was on this like sitcom called Facts of Life. I don't know if you ever heard of it, but he was on that sitcom back in the day too.
Mm. But yeah, ER was a very popular show, but yeah, you're right. Wow.
Also, the number one sitcom during that time, I never watched the show, never got into it. I don't know why. The number one sitcom during that time was Seinfeld.
Oh, I just started watching that show. Growing up, I've watched, some episodes here and there. It's funny. I love it. I love that show. It's pretty funny. It's on Netflix. I actually went back and started watching a few episodes on the first season right now. So I want to start watching more of it, though. But Seinfeld's very funny. I love that show.
Also, another show that was very popular at the time, it was in its third season. I know you're a big fan of this show, Friends.
No. You're talking about the wrong New York show. You went from a good New York show to a bad New York show. I'm like, yeah, you literally went from like, I don't know, like Upper Manhattan to like freaking like, I don't know, Queens or Brooklyn, bro. Like you just went downhill.
Queens and Brooklyn are popping. Leave them alone.
That's not according to what's her name, the character from Sex and the City, because one of the characters, like late in the series, wanted to move to Brooklyn. She didn't want to. I was like, oh my God, is it that bad?
First of all,
and this was like early 2000s. I was like, what in the hell is going on here? And she lives in Manhattan, dude.
First of all, that was over 20 years ago. Brooklyn's come a long way since then.
Yeah.
And second, you can't really judge the experience of living in New York from like those girls from that show.
Oh, no, I'm not. Of course not. Come on now. Oh, of course not. I'm not. I've never even been to New York.
Yeah, people have even maintained to me like the real New Yorkers. Like if you want to get the real New York vibe as far as sitcoms go, watch Seinfeld.
For it in Brooklyn and Queens? Of course.
Just in general, yeah, just a real New York vibe. And also, funny enough, one of my favorite sitcoms was actually in its fourth season, my favorite season of it at the time, Boy Meets World. And actually, the weekend of this Survivor Series was the same episode that aired of when Vader was on there, when Corey had to be at the birthday party and Vader's wrestling match at the same time.
Oh.
Yeah, that episode was fun. Yeah, that was still when TGIF was going on. Like, it was starting to fall off by this point, but yeah, TGIF was still around during this time. And that was a big part of my Friday nights back in those days.
You know, that is funny, though, because, like, me and my girlfriend were watching Home Improvement.
That's another good show that I never really watched like that. I always, heard good things about it, but I never really watched it.
You should actually watch. It's pretty funny. Like, it was one of those shows, like, growing up, like, I never really, like, I knew who everybody was. Oh, it's Tim Allen, and oh, it's Jonathan Taylor Thomas. Like, I knew, you know what, and I knew who they were, but it wasn't one of those shows growing up where I was like, okay, I want to sit down and watch this. I actually been sitting down and watching it with my girlfriend Samantha, and it's like, it's really funny. I like it.
Good shit.
Especially during around this time, they always do, like, their little holiday episodes and stuff. It's good. You should give it on. You should give it a try. It's on Hulu. So
yeah, I'll watch it one of these days. Also, a show that was in its first season at the time was the Jamie Foxx Show. I remember watching that show a lot with like my mom and my brother when it was like first on.
Oh yeah. That's an underrated show. I like that show. Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool. It had a couple good seasons like that. The Wayans Brothers. Yeah. Like Steve Harvey Show. We would watch those shows all the time.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, those black sitcoms were the thing, man, back in the day. Man, I wish, oh, I missed that. I just wish that they could, like, keep that, some of that same vibe into now, though. But, you know, times has changed, sadly, so.
Yeah, they had their run throughout the 90s, but after a while, I remember Fox, like, was really, like, the home place for a lot of those shows for a while. But then when Fox got, like, you know, more established shows, like, shows that weren't, like, predominantly black audiences that were successful, they pushed shows like Martin.
You got that on UPN later on.
Yeah, you had UPN and WB, but in all honesty, the quality of those shows wasn't as good as like the quality of like the black sitcoms that were on ABC, on Fox, on NBC, etc.
I mean, it was good for me when I was growing up. You know, later on, like The Parkers was like one of my favorite black sitcoms that came out.
Oh UPN, God, so. I hate that show. I can't even watch that show today.
Oh, please.
For anybody who has to watch that show.
One on one,
except for the last season, I still like, oh. I like that show. I'll give that one.
It's fun. Oh. Okay. You ready to get into Survivor Series?
Yes, I am ready to get into Survivor Series. So, yes.
There are a lot of interesting facts about this show. Some, most of it, like, we already know. And there were some, like, oh, I didn't know this. You know what I mean? So. This is a pretty interesting show. I've seen this show so many times, you know what I mean? And I had my, I remember first watching, that was kind of like, there was like three matches, like, okay. But there was some where I was kind of like, eh, you know what I mean? It's like, eh. But then like, just there was like an up and downs for me watching the show. But one of the interesting facts about this show, so Marty Jannetty, who was part of the was in the first match with the, in the Survivor Series matchup, he broke his leg in this match.
Oh yeah, they talked about this on his Dark Side of the Ring episode. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
He was the first person eliminated from the team. Yeah, I remember that.
He was the first one eliminated. Yeah.
Yeah, it was the New Rockers, which is not a concept that it's aged well. Of him and Leaf Cassidy, aka
him
Al
and
Snow.
Was Al Snow. Yeah.
Yeah, that. Yeah, not good memories of that tag team, but that's another story. It was them. And at the time, the tag team champions, the British Bulldog and Owen Hart, they were a good tag team, very good tag team.
Oh,
taking on the Godwins and a gimmick that's not really my cup of tea. Although the guys in the tag team were very talented, I did not care for the gimmick. And also the debuting Doug Furness and Philip Lafond.
Oh, okay.
Both good wrestlers, but unfortunately, during that time, WWE needed more than people who were just good wrestlers. You had to have a lot more than that, especially considering this was around the time that NWO had first started and was really getting hot. Yeah, WWE definitely needed something else to compete with them. They were slowly at the time kind of like, you know, switching things up. But you could definitely tell the temperature of WWE in 96 during this time was a lot different from the temperature of WCW at the time. I could definitely see why people were switching over to Nitro and preferring that over Raw.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I do like about this show, I love the every time at that time when WWE would come to MSG, I love the entrance. I love that narrow walkway that they had.
Yeah, they don't have it anymore. But yeah, back then, yeah, it always like made the show.
I loved it.
Look really dope. And it really added like a different vibe to it. Yeah, I always fucked with it. Yeah, my favorite of those they did was probably either the SummerSlam 98 one or the Royal Rumble 2000 one.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, it was one of those two.
But here was also dope. The one here was also
because it was a whole skyline of New York City and all that. I love that one. It was dope.
Yeah.
Here's another one. I don't know. Maybe you knew this or not, but Mr. Perfect walked out on the company the week before Survivor Series due to pretty much a lot of like financial settlements that was promised to him, but he did not receive. This would lead him to go to WCW.
I knew something was up because I remember at the time he was managing Triple H, like when Triple H won the Intercontinental title for the first time.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and then at that match, like when it was Triple H's team against Mark Merrill's team, Mr. Perfect was nowhere to be found. And then we would never see him on WWE TV again until Royal Rumble 2002.
Mm. Yeah. But yeah, he had, it was like a, it was like part of his contract.
He had this Lloyds of London deal he was like under at the time where he got like paid not to wrestle. And then maybe he wanted to wrestle again. And then WWE maybe didn't want to pay him the same amount he was getting from that Lloyds of London.
Yeah.
And that might have been what led to the split.
Yeah, he was very upset about it. And you know, of course, at this time, you got to remember, WCW was just literally trying to go after the WWE stars, trying to offer them more money so they could jump ship. This is what
Virgil even got a contract. God rest his soul. Even Virgil got a contract.
Are you serious? Oh, my
God. Yeah, you remember Virgil. You remember Virgil in WCW?
Oh, he was part of the NWO. Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, yes. Man. Wow. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And that was the thing that bit them in the ass in the end. After a while, when they kept signing all these former WWE people and just throwing them into the NWO, the NWO didn't really feel like special anymore, like feel like an exclusive club anymore.
Right. But yeah, that that whole situation with Mr. Perfect, that pretty much led to him, you know, joining WCW. So that was a whole crazy situation. Yeah, I never knew that. And speaking of contracts, right? So Bret Hart had re-signed his deal with WWE the month prior to this event.
Yes. Yes, he did.
Yes.
He was about to go to WCW. They offered him like a crazy-ass deal. And then Vince...
$2.8 million a year.
Yeah.
Oh, and he didn't jump at it. He didn't jump at it at first. So he kind of wanted to like go to Vince and match the, you know, not necessarily match it though, but just give me like a good deal, a reasonable deal that I want to be here long term. I think Vince was like 20 years, and then it was also like after he retires, he could be part of like writing or whatever. That was part of it. But that is kind of crazy how this was kind of like the starting of what will happen a year later.
Yep. It could all kind of be traced back to this, between this, his issues with Sean, all the other bullshit that happened in between. Yeah, it could be traced back to when he re-signed right around the Survivor Series time. Wow. Yeah, I remember that night on Raw when he came back and officially announced that he was coming back and he was going to face Austin in Survivor Series. I'm like, okay, good, good. And you could even see Vince on commentary. He was like super relieved when like Bret said he was going to stay.
Yeah, I know, because like Bret was the top guy, one of the top guys, even though Sean was the champ at the time.
And also considering that they had just lost Razor and Diesel a few months before, if they had lost Bret too at that time, they would have been screwed.
Oh,
they
would have
been fucking screwed.
Very screwed. Oh, boy. Let's see.
Even though it like ended the way it did, they were lucky that they had Bret for that last year.
I know. So Flash Funk, right? He wrestled on ECW for his last match the night before.
As Too Cold Scorpio.
Yes, he had a going away match on ECW. This is literally the night before, and then now the next night he's here, Madison Square Garden, Survivor Series. Didn't know that.
And unfortunately, they had to put him into a dancing gimmick with a colorful outfit as opposed to just letting him be Too Cold Scorpio, which is what made him famous in the first place.
Yeah. Oh, man. So let's see. Yokozuna's last match was
at Survivor Series. Yeah. This was his last like WWE pay-per-view. And you can't even say it was a match for him per se because he never tagged in.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. I remember that.
And I'm not going to lie, especially after watching that show again yesterday, just seeing the shape he was in at that point, you're like, yo, this is not looking good, man. This was a far cry from the Yokozuna at Survivor Series 93, Survivor Series 94, et cetera. Yeah, he definitely was not looking like he was in good shape at all.
So, I know, man. I felt bad for him because I remember watching the documentary on Yokozuna about a few years ago, and just like, they try to help him. That's the thing. They try to help him, but he just, it's sad. He's one of those guys like, man, if he would have stayed in shape, oh my God, he would have been with the company forever. You know what I mean? But,
Just after that WrestleMania when he lost the title to Bret, it was just never the same.
I know. I mean, it was cool that he tag team. He was doing a tag team with Owen Hart. That was cool. I like that though. But yeah, you're right. It wasn't the same after WrestleMania 10 for him.
Yeah, and also in that same 8-man tag, we had the debut of the Nation of Domination.
Oh, that's right, right.
It wasn't what it would become later. It was just Farouk, the Clarence Mason dude, and also that PG-13 tag team doing the rap on the way to the ring.
Yeah.
We are the Nation, live and in color. Don't diss the man because he won't press your mother. Listen what I'm saying. It's for real, not playing. Farouk is the man, so hit your knees and start praying. Yeah, those dudes.
Yeah. So
hey, I'll say this. It was a huge improvement over that gladiator head bullshit they had him do.
God, don't give me. Oh, please don't get me started on that. I forgot the Farouk. Yeah.
Trash.
It was so the trash. Outfit was just so like fucking what the trash, hell is this? Oh man, 1996 for you, ladies and gentlemen.
Another crappy gimmick we had that was involved in this match was the Ghetto Razor and Ghetto Diesel.
I can't believe they were doing that. Oh my God. I can't believe they were insulting us like that. We're not dumb. Oh yeah, it's Diesel and Razor Ramon are still here. No, they're not. Stop it.
I'll say this: for as bad as that gimmick was, at least Kane, Glenn Jacobs, he made that version of Diesel at least something of his own. He at least tried to adopt those same mannerisms, even if it was a stupid gimmick. He at least tried, so I'll give him that.
Yeah. So this night, you know, is known for a lot of things, though, but this one, top of the list, is known for the debut of The Rock. He'll make his debut in a Survivor Series, a traditional Survivor Series tag match. But after the match, he did get the win. He got the final elimination over Goldust, right? But here's a little interesting fact. See, he didn't know where the hard camera was.
Yeah, he made that mistake twice. He made that mistake in the beginning of the match when he came out for his entrance, and then he made that mistake at the end of the match, like when he won, like when he was raising his hands. He also didn't look at the hard camera.
Yeah.
Yo, but they put him on in a major way, though, for his debut, for it like being his first major match. Yo, they
in Madison Square really Garden? Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And he did really well in that match.
Yeah, say what you want about the goofy outfit. Say what you want about maybe what happened afterwards with the Rocky Sucks chants and all that. But on that night, yo, they made him look like a star.
He did, and he got a good reaction that night.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he got a good reaction. That's all what it matters. It was for that one night, but we all know what happened moving forward. It didn't turn out to what, you know, the people in the back wanted, and then they had to make a change, though. But yeah, this was a good stepping stone for him, man. And Survivor Series is usually known for certain wrestlers to make their great debuts. You know, The Rock, The Undertaker, Sting.
Kurt Angle, The Shield.
Yeah, Kurt Angle, yes, yes.
Also, another funny thing about that match The Rock was in, we got our first glimpses of the feud between him and Triple H as they went at it during their match for a few minutes.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Yeah, wow. I went back and watched that match. I'm like, yo, like, who could imagine just 2 years later at SummerSlam 98 they would have that ladder match that stole the show. That, like, pretty much put them in that main event scene after that.
Yep. There's another one I didn't know. So Mark Henry was originally supposed to be in the Survivor Series, though, but he got replaced by Jake Roberts due to a leg injury.
Yes, he was supposed to be in that match, and they did an angle on Superstars earlier that day where he was doing a tug of war with Crush, and then Crush and the rest of the team attacked him, so that would explain why he was out of the match. Yep. And then, yeah, Jake the Snake Roberts was his last-minute replacement.
Wow, yeah, that's crazy.
And damn, son, I love Jake the Snake Roberts. He's one of my favorite characters, also one of my favorite talkers in wrestling history. But going back to watch him in that 96 period, especially this point in 96, yeah, it's just not the same vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It wasn't.
He was losing so fucking often. He, like, pretty much lost almost every match he was in. I just remember, like, in his first run in the 80s, he rarely ever got pinned. I think the only two times I could think of him ever getting pinned, like, in that 80s period, was this one Survivor Series match in 88 when he was going against Andre the Giant's team, and then obviously WrestleMania 8 when he lost to Undertaker. Yeah. And, okay, and one more. The matches he had with Savage, like, in the beginning of 92, he got pinned a lot then, too.
Oh, okay, yeah. But
during this time, man, during this time, yo, he was getting beat all the time.
Yeah, but most notably, even though he lost this match, he put Stone Cold Steve Austin over in the finals of the King of the Ring match, though.
Yeah, that's probably the most notable thing he did during that second run was that.
Yes. So, yeah. Of course we know this already. So, Vader was originally supposed to be Shawn Michaels' opponent in the WWE Championship match, but it was Sid Vicious because Psycho of what Sid. Happened at SummerSlam earlier. Psycho Sid, sorry.
Yeah, that after that SummerSlam match with Shawn, that didn't really go the way it was supposed to. Yeah, Vader was in on that same level again.
Yeah.
I could tell at the time after he lost to Shawn and then he lost the number one contenders match to Sid at the pay-per-view the month before. I'm like, Vader doesn't really feel that hot anymore. And then it proved to be true considering they put him in that random Survivor Series match that like had no real build, no story, and like just ended in a double disqualification. Yeah, I could like just tell that Vader was like kind of falling off a little bit after that.
You know what? When I look back at it, man, look, mistakes happen, but it's just I feel bad for him because it's like, look, we make mistakes, you know, and it was a small little mistake, and it was because of Shawn went off on him. That's kind of that was why he wasn't in the match for Survivor Series, you know. And I just felt like he should just maybe should have got another chance.
I get it, but honestly, the way everything worked out at the end, especially with the main event, how it turned out in the end, I have no complaints.
Yeah.
Sid was building a lot of momentum ever since he came back, like the summer before. He was like getting a lot of great reactions, and he really felt like a bigger deal in a way that he hadn't felt pretty much ever. So him being in the title match with Shawn, I liked it. In a way, I was kind of low-key rooting for him to win.
Well, pretty much everybody in the garden was cheering for Sid, Psycho Sid. Surprisingly, I was like, well, I remember when I first watched this show for the very first time, you know, years ago, I was like, is this crowd? Don't tell me that what I'm hearing, they're cheering for Psycho Sid over my boy. Like, what the hell was going on? I was like, damn, dude. And then It was a good match, you know, because Shawn always worked well with bigger guys. We've seen it before in the past, you know what I mean? And it was the ending was just crazy because, like, Michaels has the match won, right? And he attends to Jose Lothario, his manager, because Psycho Sid hits him with the camera.
Yeah, that was weird. And the crowd cheered that too.
Yeah, I was like, what the hell is this? He's about to win the match, but instead of, you know, finishing the match, he attends to his manager, and then Psycho Sid gets out the ring, and then he hits him with the camera, throws him back in, and he finishes him with the powerbomb, and that was it. But that was just a weird ending, man.
And apparently Shawn wasn't happy with the reaction he got that night to the point where after the match, he went to a bar and just got fucked up out of his mind.
Whoa, I did not know that.
Yeah, I heard that story before. I could see why he was upset. Because I actually went to the Garden for a house show 3 months before this in August. And yeah, he got a great reaction. But on this night, the women liked him. I remember when he came out, like you could hear like the girls screaming and everything. Oh, yeah. But all the hardcore wrestling fans, all those like really hardcore older fans, they drained them out. Reaction for Sid was way stronger than the reaction for Shawn.
Of course.
Yeah, especially when Sid first comes out and he's like giving everybody the fist bump and he's like, who's the man? Who's the man? Who's the man? Yo, it was gold, son. Like when he came out, I'm like, yo, I hope he wins. And I was happy when he did.
But like, was there a reason why you want him to win? Were you just kind of like, all right, Shawn's title reign a little bit too long. I just want to see somebody different. Is it the fact that like, hey, the momentum of Psycho Sid's getting, you're kind of like, well, I kind of want to see this guy go on top. Was those your reasons?
A little bit of both, yeah, because Shawn by that point had been the champion for almost 8 months. And Sid kind of felt like, you know, something new and something fresh. And just like when that reaction happened, like when he came out, I'm like, yo, I hope he wins. And he did.
Okay. One thing, another thing that we forgot to mention is that of debuts, well, The Undertaker debuts his new look. So The Undertaker is always known for redeveloping his character and, you know, just, you know, taking it up a notch. This time he, you know, goes to like you say like a Lord of Darkness attire. He got going on. He's wearing black leather, and it wasn't just what he was wearing that night, but what the entrance, because he's coming down from the ceiling, looking like a bat out of hell.
Yeah,
just coming. It was down.
some Michael Keaton, Bruce Wayne, Batman vibes.
For real. What do you thought of that, of his attire, that when you saw him that like, that night? Like, look, he kind of redeveloped it a little bit more, like a year later, looked a little more better though. But like this one was like different. Like, what do you thought about that? Because prior to that, my favorite version of The Undertaker is, of course, when he wore the purple gloves. That is my all-time favorite Undertaker.
Yeah, that was the thing. It was kind of weird, like, not seeing him wear the gloves anymore, because he always wore the gloves ever since he debuted. And, like, he's wearing this whole leather outfit and this whole different outfit. I love the entrance. Yeah. The entrance was dope. But the outfit itself, yeah, it kind of, like, took a little getting used to. I know that outfit didn't last long, but just in general, like, seeing him wear, like, different clothing, yeah, it was definitely not something that clicked right away. Not something that clicked right away. Yeah. Also, he had his hair in a ponytail, too.
True, and he wasn't wearing gloves.
Yeah, and also another point I wanted to bring up, I feel like by this point, the Undertaker and Mankind feud had kind of run its course. Like, after the Buried Alive match the month before, I'm like, okay, I don't need to see this match anymore.
And they had it was funny how they went from a Buried Alive match to, like, a normal match, though. But the only difference is that Paul Bearer is hung up in a cage.
Yeah.
Above the ring. So, and you know, what was weird about that match? Like, okay, Undertaker won the match, but he was going to get his hands on Paul Bearer, but he didn't, because he'll get distracted by this wrestler called the Executioner,
who's actually real identity is Terry Bam Bam Gordy, who was one of the original Freebirds. And funny enough, this would be his last Madison Square Garden appearance, was this night.
Yeah,
they did an episode of Dark Side of the Ring about him last year.
Oh, okay.
They talk about this brief run that he had as the Executioner, and it didn't last long because he had a lot of personal problems, and it just didn't work out.
Out of all, from this whole card, right, what was your, like, favorite match?
I can't believe you're even asking me this.
Of course, I know. Brett and Austin.
Yes, that was my favorite match of the whole night. Brett and Austin was a classic. People talk about their WrestleMania 13 match, as great as it is. I feel like this match is no less good than that one is.
Of course. And it was a submission match, right?
Yeah, but this match, it was like Bret Hart's like first major match since WrestleMania 12. And this was like Austin's like first like real like main event level match since he had been in WWE. Because people always like say that the King of the Ring, when he won, it was like his launching pad. And yeah, it was a good moment for him. But after that, he wasn't really doing much for a while. Like, he didn't really start to get elevated to that main event level until this feud with Bret. And this very first match was the catalyst to pretty much the Austin we would see by like the next Survivor Series going into 98 and so on.
Yeah, I agree. Austin needed Brett, and Brett pretty much it was the feud itself that helped Austin elevate as a star. You know what I mean? You gotta remember, Austin at the time was a heel at the time. You know what I mean? So
yeah, he was a like heartless, vicious heel at that point too. Like, I remember the Stone Cold from like 98, 99, when he's like, you know, drinking beer and having fun and all that jazz. This was not that Stone Cold in 96. This dude was a fucking asshole to the team.
Right. To everybody.
And one of the most memorable angles that happened actually before the Survivor Series was the angle where he attacked Brian Pillman with the cane, like Brian Pillman's injured ankle. And then, like, he put the chair on the ankle and stomped on it. And then they had the home invasion when Austin tried to break into his house and then Pillman pulled a gun out on him. Yeah, all that shit happened like right going into this show.
And then didn't the USA Network got in trouble?
Yeah, they got pissed off at WWE for that.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, you know, I have to agree. This is my favorite match. I'll put Sean and Psycho Sid at number two.
Yeah, this match was brutal. It was like a mix of a wrestling match and a hardcore match all in one. Like, that one spot where they fight into the crowd and, like, Brett punches Austin and Austin, like, falls down to the point where, like, he, like, drops the railing. The railing falls, like, right behind him.
Yeah.
And there was that one spot where, like, Austin slingshotted Brett into the announce table. And then he did, like, an axe handle to Brett on the announce table. Yeah, this match was a fight, son. These two beat the hell out of each other.
They did. And I love the technical style of this wrestling match. And also, from Austin, you saw like a different like wrestler side from him. I've noticed that. I don't know if you noticed, but Austin wrestled really differently before his neck injury.
Yeah, before the incident with Owen, yeah, his style was a lot different.
Yeah, very differently. A little bit more of like faster pace, I've noticed. Maybe.
Yeah, because I don't recall him doing too many superplexes, like, you know, after the Owen injury. Yeah. Hell, he did a superplex from the top rope in this match. I don't think I had ever seen that up to this point.
Yeah, I think I did love the finish. Love the finish at this match.
When Austin put him in the $1 million dream and then Brett kicked the ropes and then turned it into a pin. Yeah, very reminiscent of WrestleMania 8. Perfect. And that finish worked so well because Brett won the match. But even though Brett won, Austin didn't really lose anything. Like, Austin lost in a way where
he didn't.
Like, it could have gone either way and it left it open for the feud to continue, which it definitely did.
Yes. It was supposed to like elevate Austin. Like I said, Austin needed Bret Hart. If they did not have this feud, Austin wouldn't be, you know, the star as he is now. So, and I thought it was really good when Bret got inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2006. I thought it was having Stone Cold induct him was like the right choice, in my opinion.
It's so crazy because I remember this feud very well at the time and how like hardcore and, you know, personal it felt and how like they would just like beat the hell out of each other every time they would cross paths. And it was so weird to find out like so many years later that they were actually cool with each other and they were actually friends.
Yeah. Right.
Like, damn, son.
Right.
Yeah. But it's definitely one of those great feuds during that period that WWE really needed to like come at least compete with WCW.
For this event, well, two things. Out of 10, what will you rate this out of 10? And as for like a Madison Square Garden pay-per-view, does this hit like top 5 for you or top 3? Or
I would say if I had to rank it on a scale from 1 to 10, I would rank it a 7. Yeah. The Bret and Austin match is a classic. Another one to add to Bret Hart's list of classics at Madison Square Garden. Also, the main event's good, especially the outcome when Sid winning at the end. That was good. Mm-hmm. The match with The Rock's debut was also cool. It was one of the better Survivor Series matches on the show. I thought out of the 3 Survivor Series matches they had, that was the best one. Mm-hmm. And everything else on the show was just okay. I did like one thing actually that did happen in the match before the main event. I did like the cameo from Superfly Jimmy Snuka, especially considering that he just got put into the Hall of Fame the night before.
Yeah, they had their Hall of Fame ceremony night before,
And that would be the last Hall of Fame they would have until 2004.
Yeah, wow. Oof.
I mean, I would say the show was decent. It was one of the better shows they had in 96, but I would say it's not in my top 5 for Madison Square Garden pay-per-views. My top 5 are Royal Rumble 2000, Survivor Series 2002, mm-hmm. WrestleMania 20, mm-hmm. SummerSlam 91, mm-hmm. And WrestleMania 10. How can I forget?
Okay. So I have like 3.
All right. So for one, I'm going to give the show like the same grade, 7 out of 10. I like the main event. Loved Austin, Bret Hart. The Rock's debut was cool. I just felt like the other stuff outside of that was a bit kind of like, it's not one of my favorite Madison Square Garden events.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, it has its moments. A Madison Square Garden vibe definitely adds to it. Yeah. But I would say I would rank this like slightly at the same level as SummerSlam 88.
Yeah. If I had like, it doesn't hit like my top 3 or top 5. Like, my top 3 is WrestleMania 20, Royal Rumble 2000, and Survivor Series 2002. Those are like my top 3 Madison Square Garden shows.
Not mad at that pick at all.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those shows like, you know what? I could like maybe, you know, I'll watch some skip over here, but you know, it is what it is. But hey, you know, nostalgic part, especially for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was just a fun time period. That like fall of 96 period with everything going on in pop culture. Yeah. It was a fun time with wrestling being a part of it too.
Oh, yeah.
But I will say I do not like this Survivor Series as much as the one the year before, 95.
Oh, we maybe should have did that one. Maybe next year we could do 95.
It'll be the 30-year anniversary.
Yeah, oh, that's true. That's true.
I've always maintained for as much as the WWE products sucked in 1995,
I know
that Survivor Series was a good
episode. Yeah, I could agree. I could say that was probably the best pay-per-view from that year.
Yeah, no debate about it. It definitely wasn't WrestleMania. It damn sure wasn't SummerSlam. It wasn't pretty much any of the In Your Houses. The only one I could say that was maybe a little close was Royal Rumble.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah.
But one last thing I want to add about Survivor Series 96, you could definitely feel the first rumblings of the Attitude Era from this show with Austin having the performance that he did in the match with Bret. Also, The Rock's debut. And The Rock, like, getting it on with Triple H a little bit, that would lead to their classic rivalry a few years later. Yeah. Also, the debut of The Undertaker's new look, like, the new attire. And that reaction that Sid got and that reaction Sean got. That was, like, one of those first signs of, like, the fans, like, you know, turning against, like, what's being forced on them.
Yeah. And I've one more thing before. I noticed after that event, Sean started to, like, attitude started to like change just a tad bit, a little bit, even though he was a baby face still.
Yeah, you hear those stories all the time about Sean, like back in those days, like about his attitude, his behavior, and considering that he got the reaction that he did that night, even though he was the champion and like the sympathetic good guy, I could see that really pissing him off. I mean, we heard about how that pissed Ronda Rousey off a few years ago, like after that match with Charlotte.
Yeah. Okay, so you ready to head back to our normal time?
Yes, I'm ready to head back. I had a lot of fun talking about that 96 Survivor Series. It was definitely maybe not the best Survivor Series ever, but definitely a lot of major moments that would lead to bigger things for WWE in the years to follow.
Yeah, man, this is something we're going to be doing every month, ladies and gentlemen. And like, I thought it was be like a cool little segment to, you know, rewind and go back and reflect on events and stuff that happened, you know, back in time. And for next month, most likely we may cover Armageddon 2000.
Armageddon 2000 sounds like a good pick. I really enjoyed that main event to that show.
Yeah. I haven't watched it in a while, but definitely December 2000. Wow.
Ooh. And pop culture was a whole nother animal during that time.
We're in a new millennium. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy, though. So, yeah, so that will be the topic for next month, Armageddon 2000. And, of course, before that, the following week, we will have our prediction show for Survivor Series, before Thanksgiving. So, yeah.
Yeah, one of my favorite times of the whole year, Survivor Series, Thanksgiving, the start of the holiday season, start of me watching my holiday movies, and my vegan Thanksgiving dinner, which I cannot wait to make.
I'm going to be out of town for Thanksgiving this weekend, so I'm looking forward to that. So, yeah, anything to say, Kurt, before we jet off?
Shout out to your Chargers for the winning streak they've been on lately. Good for you, bro.
Boy, I am on a high horse right now. I'm going to take from the great JBL, it is morning in America, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. Oh, yes. Oh, this feels so damn good right now. But I'm trying to – it's a one – I'm just
– And shout out to my Knicks for being 3 in a row and hopefully 4 in a row after tonight because they play the Suns.
Oh, yeah? Guess who team's on a 6-game winning streak right now?
The Lakers?
Yes. Lakers won good. 6 straight games last night, and the rookie that they drafted, Dalton, was it Kite? He 37 points. That's the most points rookie has scored this season, Kurt. That was the steal of the draft. We picked a number 17, and like, I don't watch college basketball, you know what I mean? But I heard like he's really good, and this dude was just balling out during preseason. I was like, oh my God. And then this dude drops 37 points last night. I was like, whoa. Oh, the Lakers are playing different this year, Kurt. And I had doubts because of JJ Redick, because like, look, he never had head coaching experience or any coaching experience like to begin with. And they're playing, you know, high tempo. They're starting off the season right. Usually the Lakers don't start off the season well. So, hey, I'm liking it.
Yeah, shout out to them. The Cavaliers have also been killing it lately, too. They were 15-0 up until last night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They were, yeah. Ooh. Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, they haven't been that good in years.
Yeah. Oh, but what if they could win the East? I would love to see them in the finals this 2025. I wouldn't mind it.
Maybe them against the Lakers.
Yeah. Oh my God. Imagine LeBron playing against Cleveland in the finals, Kurt. Can you imagine that?
Anything's possible. That's one thing I've learned over
the years.
Whether it's sports, whether it's wrestling, that's one thing I've learned over the years. Anything is possible, even that.
True. Wow. Okay, so in the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Jonathan Randall, Kurt Kadek. Take care, God bless, and stay safe. And we'll see you next Monday when we do our recap show for – no, not recap, our prediction show for Survivor Series.
All right, yeah, so take care, guys. Have a good weekend. More importantly of all, remember, don't be an asshole or a douchebag in real life or social media, especially during the holiday time, because that shit is for the birds. And if you do, I'm going to make a rap diss about you.
All right, take care, everybody. See you guys next week.